Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Kitchen Table Mystic. This is your host, Mary Petite, and her barking dog in the background, because we really are at the kitchen table. It's true. And anything can happen at the kitchen table, as you may find in this episode. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Lynn Levine. Lynn is she works with the American Red Cross. She is now the Director of Communications for the Red Cross based in Boston, Massachusetts. She was previously the Regional Manager for International Services, and she has some very interesting stories to share with us about connection and about reconnecting families and people lost in situations of war or humanitarian disasters or natural disasters. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Thank you for having me, Mary.
Thank you for coming. I'm your host, Mary Petite. I'm the kitchen table mystic in my kitchen with my barking dog. And we're going to start with something a little bit mystical and fun like we always do today, drawing one of our woman rune cards, which are the creation of Molly Reamer. And you can find woman runes on the Mother House of the Goddess website, www.motherhouseofthegoddess.com. I'm going to have Lynn make a spread of cards. We're going to spread them. And our guest Lynn is going to draw a card to set our tone. What you got?
The Crowned Heart, rune of unconditional love, faith in love and unconditional love.
That's perfect.
It is perfect.
That's perfect for people having faith and finding their loved one, isn't it?
There's a lot of that in the work that we do. In fact, it's considered first aid, but for the mind. And so we're giving people hope when they come to us. It's really, really something.
See, that's what's funny about mysticism. It works. The cards are accurate. Oh, Lynn, thank you again for joining us. How many displaced persons would the Red Cross, what number would the Red Cross give us to tell us, to give us an idea of the extent of displaced people in the world today?
Well, it's a pretty staggering number. We're looking at about 16.3 million displaced persons globally right now, which is the largest number since World War II.
That's a staggering figure.
That includes people who are considered internally displaced. That means they are within the borders of their own country, so the rules are a little bit different for them. Refugees are considered people who have crossed an international border, and these are the people that you hear about in the news more often than not. And that number is at 21.3 million.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the larger number, 62.3, we're looking at about 34,000 people per day who have to flee their homes.
So if you zoom out and you took a really wide view, are we looking at a planetary migration of people?
Oh, we are absolutely looking at a planetary migration of people, yeah.
And we can safely say that walls aren't going to be the solution to that.
I think that is, we're going to hear a little bit later when we get a little bit more specific about one of the stories, we will hear that building walls and not communicating and not connecting with people is probably the worst thing we can do. I mean, we must continue to connect.
So the theme, as usual at Kitchen Table Mystic, is connection. This is a radio show that connects inspiring women, and I think Lynn definitely qualifies this one. okay, Lynn, can you, how many families could you estimate that the Red Cross helps annually?
So I can tell you numbers for about a year ago, for 2015. We had about 14,000 families come to us looking for help. It's more like 13.5. It takes a really long time for their cases to sort of work their way to a resolution. So that same year, I can tell you that we did successfully find resolution and reconnect families in the number of 4,256. So 4,200 families found a family member as a result of the work that we do globally. And it's a global network. It's not just the American Red Cross. It's really an international network of Red Cross societies that work together to be able to implement this really important work.
Which is wonderful to hear that so many people are trying to help, because that's needed. Let's talk about specific stories of reconnection. I know you want to share an inspiring story that comes out of the Republic of Congo, Congolese
yeah.
family.
Yeah, yeah, this one really, I mean, they all touch me. And what's really interesting is the families, you stay close to the families even after their cases are closed, because the stories are just so heart-touching. They could be heart-rending. They're just very, very moving stories, no matter what the resolution. I mean, sometimes we'll find a family member and we're delivering a death certificate. But in this case, it was a really wonderful story. So a man came to me in December of 2014. He could barely speak English. He had been in the country, in America, for almost 10 years. And his story was that he had grown up in the Democratic Republic of Congo, that I will refer to as the DRC. And as we know or don't know, there's some really terrible armed conflict going on there that's been going on for decades. So his family, his village was raided, and the village basically just scattered. His family scattered, and for the previous 10 years, he hadn't known anything about what his family, what had become of them. What we do know is that a lot of the people from the DRC who were sort of affected by this kind of military action often fled across the border to Burundi. So what this individual did was wind up in a refugee camp in Burundi, and about 10 years ago he was transferred as a refugee into the United States. So again, he comes to me in December of 2014, and he has a list of 10 family members he wants to find. The primary is his brother, and then his brother's children and a cousin, and so I took down all the information and dispatched that request, including all of the last known information. Who would they have contacted? Where could they have gone? What are their names? What are their parents' names? Because oftentimes in these villages, you can only identify people by the parents' name, the mother or the father, depending on what tribe or culture they're from. So that request went to Burundi, and it went on and on, and I didn't hear anything for a year. And in the meantime, over the course of a year, I have 50, 60, 70 other families coming to me. Last December, almost a year ago, I get information from the contact that his family has been located. And I open up the mail from our national headquarters, and it's essentially it's a communique from the Burundi Red Cross, and it has his brother's information, the address, and the phone number. Please deliver and confirm that the requester has received. So I got in a Red Cross, you know, Dodge Durango, and drove up to Lynn, Massachusetts, and knocked on his door. It was essentially, low-income housing. It was a rooming house and, you know, very immigrant-centered neighborhood. And I knocked on his door, and I explained to him that I was from the Red Cross and that we had news. And so he invited me into his house, and we sat down at his kitchen table.
Oh.
And in broken French and broken English, I explained to him that I had information on his brother, that we had found them, and his eyes lit up. He was a man of very, very, very dark complexion, and the whites of his teeth when he smiled, it was just so amazing. We sat there and talked, and I explained to him that he could now contact his family, because the Red Cross, the American Red Cross, doesn't actually buy plane tickets. We just actually facilitate the connection. But my heart was telling me that wasn't enough to just give him the paper, and I handed him my cell phone, knowing that the charge was going to come back to my office supervisor, who was going to get a call to Burundi and say, "What is this?" But I didn't care, so I handed him the phone. We dialed the number of his brother, and he spoke to his brother on the phone for about 20 minutes. He spoke to his niece. Mm. They put me on the phone. They couldn't thank me enough. It was I cried. There were tears all around. It was truly wonderful. In the follow-up to that, I can tell you that the armed strife has unfortunately continued in Burundi, so his family members were in a little bit of a tough situation. But thanks to some diplomatic influence on the part of our Red Cross representatives, we were able to ensure that his family was properly registered as refugees, and now they're safe. and they've all got refugee cards, and it's now just a matter of time before they are able to go through the process of getting moved out of that situation. So, and he's just, he can't be happier. It's just a really good story.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That is so good to hear. That's, was it magical?
Oh, it was magical. I walked out of there and I couldn't talk about it enough for the next couple of weeks. And the nice thing is he continues to contact me to let me know what's going on with his family and tell me how much progress he himself is making now with school and language, you know, study. Yeah.
This is good to hear in the current climate. All these good things are happening. Wow. So are they planning to all settle in the United States?
I think that's the hope.
Okay.
The resettlement process is a little complicated. So the host country, which is now Burundi, has their own internal rules about refugee resettlement. So they may be resettled in Burundi.
Okay.
They may fall through the process through the United Nations High Commission for Refugees into their process for resettling refugees somewhere. So there really is no guarantee that they would come to the United States, but it's a high probability because they have a family member here.
Okay.
But it does take a long time. It took this man about 10 years to get to the United States after he was officially registered as a refugee.
But just that they know where each other are,
they're
and that
frequent contact,
that they're all alive is,
exactly.
is just it's just astounding for
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. This is the Kitchen Table Mystic. I am Mary Petite, your host. You can find me on Facebook under MaryPetiet. My guest is Lynn Levine of the American Red Cross. She's currently the Director of Communications for the Red Cross in Boston, and she was formerly the Regional Manager for International Services for the Red Cross. And she's sharing stories of reconnection of missing family members. Lynn, you have another story that takes us to Syria, to the current situation there, which is something that's very much in the news right now.
Yeah, this is a story that hits a little bit closer to home for those of us here who live in the country and who watch the news, and so we'll all be familiar with these stories. So I was into my new position with the Red Cross about 2 weeks when a man named Michael Foley came to my office. He said that his brother was missing. He didn't know where he was. He was a journalist. And the last they had seen of him or heard of him was in Syria.
The journalist Jim Foley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know what happened to Jim at this point because he was, unfortunately, you know, tragically the first journalist to be beheaded by ISIS about a year ago in August. But the story is one of connection. It's also one of I think, a personal struggle because I know that. I can imagine that we all want to do whatever we can to help people, our neighbors, our family members, the wider community, the greater good. And we come up against barriers where we know that we're limited. And this was one of those cases. There was only so much we could do. The Syrian government was not cooperating with the American government. And as far as the program goes, traditionally this Restoring Family Links program of the Red Cross really only helps families separated across an international border. So, for example, if there was an earthquake in Peru and a family from Hyannis called and said, you know, my son, who's an American citizen, is lost somewhere in Peru, can you find him? We have to refer that family to the State Department. That doesn't actually fall under the mission. Of course, there's always the possibility of accepting a case under humanitarian grounds, and this was one of those.
Okay.
So back to Jim Foley.
Yeah.
What we did was we had frequent conference calls with the head of the ICRC, which is the International Committee of the Red Cross, and they're the ones who were working in Syria. The Syrian Red Crescent was very much involved in trying to provide, and they still are, in providing humanitarian aid and do these reconnections. But there is only so much you can do when you cannot actually access the geographical area. So nobody was able to get in anywhere and to even find out where Jim was. Nobody knew who had him. Did the Syrian government have him? Did the ISIS have him? Did al-Nusra? Nobody knew, and nobody was saying anything. In the meantime, about 2 weeks later, another individual came to my office, and this was Nancy Curtis. And she came in to tell me that her son Theo, who was also a writer, she was terrified because he was usually in contact with her, and the last email she got from her was very bizarre. She didn't know where he was, and he hadn't answered her in 2 weeks. She hadn't heard a word.
So there were two missing American journalists.
Within the course of a two-week period, yes.
Okay.
So I want to back up and say that under normal circumstances, I could not actually be telling you who these people are because the services that we provide with the Red Cross are highly confidential. We do not tell anybody what we're doing and who we're serving. So our clients can really rely on absolute confidentiality. The reason I can actually talk about them is twofold. One, because they were in the news.
Yes,
very much in the news. And second, and this is, I think, the thing that connects us back to what we're talking about here around the kitchen table, is that eventually I was connected, as far as Jim's family goes, with his mother, Diane Foley. And here I am talking to Nancy Curtis, who's Theo's mother, and I had two women who were in unbelievable, unfathomable
in the
pain,
same situation.
In the same situation, and my hands were tied. And I said, there's got to be a way around this. So I called both of them individually, and I said, look, you know, unfortunately and coincidentally, there's another family in the area who is in the same situation that you are. Can I give you her number? Both said yes, and I can tell you that in the aftermath, both have come back to me to tell me that the other mother was a rock for them.
Wow.
During this struggle. There is another really interesting piece to this story. As you know, Theo Curtis was released by al-Nusra about 2 to 3 months after the execution of Jim Foley. Most probably a political, you know, thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is, in spite of the horrors he went through, he went back to the area with a film crew to document what he had gone through. So it's pretty much a documentary with him speaking about the time that he spent in this, in captivity with al-Nusra Front. The film is called Theo Who Lived, and I encourage everyone to actually see it. It's truly eye-opening and touching, because in spite of the treatment that he had undergone, he had found a way to connect with his captors. He speaks Arabic. He had studied Arabic, so he was able to do that, to connect with them, to listen to their grievances, to acknowledge their grievances. And to this day, what's interesting is they are connected on Facebook, and the people who held him at the very end want to know where is this film? Where can they see it? What's going on? What does the American people think of us?
Wow.
And the final piece of that is I went to see the opening of the film, and he said, we are not going to have progress in this struggle against this ideological or any kind of struggle against people we don't understand unless we listen to them. So that goes back to what you had said earlier. Walls don't work.
Connections work.
Yeah.
And I think the key now is reconnecting, connecting, establishing connections.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, where would somebody find that film?
Well, you can go online to TheoWhoLived.com.
Okay.
You just Google that. It had a limited premiere, unfortunately, and one of the challenges is it's not out in the movies, but it's possible that you might be able to order it or maybe stream it somewhere. I don't know.
Has he written about this as well? Is he speaking?
He is speaking about it.
Yeah.
You can actually follow him on Facebook.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right.
And there are a couple of articles where you can go, and like there was a piece in the New York Times about his about the movie and about his time there. So there's plenty of information out there right now.
Okay. Wow. I'm going to definitely look at that on Facebook to see how that connection unfolds.
I had a few questions for him, and I actually asked him. I said, what was that last email that you sent her, your mother? Because Nancy had told me I got a weird email, and it just said, hi, and that was the end of it. And I asked him, what was it? He said, I don't know, because by that time I was already a captive. I don't know how that got out. I don't know who sent it.
That's a mystery.
It is a mystery.
That's there's no answer to that?
No.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Ooh. I think Theo Curtis was a very lucky man.
I would say so.
Yeah, I like his message.
Okay.
Where are we on the kitchen table, Mystic? This is the Kitchen Table Mystic. I'm Mary Petit. I'm your host. We are broadcasting from the kitchen table. We are in Cape Cod in Barnstable Village. My guest is Lynn Levine, and she works for the American Red Cross. And we're basically talking about connection, because that's always the theme of the show. The show is meant to connect inspiring women. The more connections we make, the more progress we make, I think. I'm going to have Lynn draw one more woman rune card before we conclude to see how it. First, I'm going to shuffle. I'm going to give me a minute to shuffle. You can hear me shuffle at the table. And we'll do a drawing. Okay, Lynn, what do we got?
This one looks like it wants to come out.
Okay, it's coming out.
This one is the seed, rune of waiting, ripening, pregnancy, and assessment. So I like this card because I think, Mary, by the work that you're doing with this Kitchen Table Mystic podcast, you're planting one of many seeds to make connections, to bring people together, and to empower positive change. And I think we all have seeds that we can plant to do that. I don't know, maybe you have something to add to that card?
I think that's lovely, but I couldn't do it without my guests. So thank you, Lynn, for joining us.
Can I just add
yes,
that?
Yes, please do.
The fact that if anyone is listening, if you know of someone in your community who might be able to benefit from this free service offered by the American Red Cross, have these people contact their local chapter of the Red Cross, and they can just specify that they're looking to find a family member overseas under the Restoring Family Links program.
And you know what, listeners, if you're inspired by the story here and by what the Red Cross is capable of doing in the world at this time when we need it, you might be interested in volunteering. Lynn, how would somebody volunteer for the Red Cross?
Anyone can volunteer by going to redcross.org, and there is a volunteer button, and you can just get started. You can see what opportunities are available in your local community. I am partial to the Red Cross because I love the mission. I'm very, very, very embedded and attached to it. But there are many missions out there that could use volunteers. And I think in a time like today when we're all wondering what can we do, do something.
This is a great thing you can do because that is the big question
right
now.
Give your time.
Yeah, give your time.
Give your time.
And your energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is a Kitchen Table Mystic. Thank you for joining us. Our next show is on December 2nd at 10:30. And I will look forward to talking to you all then. I am Mary Petit, your host. You can find me on MaryPetiet on Facebook. My guest has been Lynn Levine from the American Red Cross. Thank you, Lynn, so much for sharing those inspiring stories of connection.
Thank you for having me, Mary.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.